Hello there, welcome to The Profit Margin. This week we're talking lobbying, the paid persuaders. Does your industry need someone to stand up and fight for it? What do lobbyists bring to the table and what are some of the tactics they employ? How can you encourage a sector to speak with one voice? And does it really make a difference?
You're listening to The Profit Margin with First Trust Bank.
You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at The Profit Margin or email me naomi@theprofitmargin.co.uk. We're also on the Irish News website under the business section. But we're talking about lobbying today, campaigning for your industry. How do you do it and does it work? In the studio with Jamie DeLorge and me, we have Stephen Kelly from Manufacturing NI. We're also going to hear from Gareth Quinn from Digital DNA. Stephen, hello to you.
Hi, Naomi.
Stephen, what are the range of firms that you represent?
As a membership of 550 firms, just because you don't pay us doesn't mean we don't represent you. So we represent all the manufacturing sector, from the very largest Moyparks and Bombardiers right down to the smallest micro manufacturers right across Northern Ireland. And I just wanted to pick up on something in your intro there, which is those paid for lobbyists piece. What you tend to find with lots of lobbying organisations is that at the core of it all is volunteers. So in my organisation, we have a board of 14. Each one of those gives their time freely. Each one of those gives their time in order for the whole sector to actually benefit. So yes, there's a paid for element, but that volunteering piece is really critically important.
Are there a lot of competing voices within the sector? You know, you're talking about big manufacturers and then small manufacturers. Surely they must have different agendas.
There's certainly a diverse view of what's required and what's needed. And that's part of the challenge, is to kind of amalgamate all those issues, demands, concerns, worries and opportunities and bring those into small edible chunks that are memorable in many ways for the policymakers out there, so that they can actually know that whatever action they take actually benefits a broader population, not just one or two individual firms.
Well, you've indicated that you don't ask for the earth, but you must employ a range of different techniques to get what you want delivered. Now, what would be key to that strategy?
We've noticed this, certainly with a lot of kind of industry sectors, they ask for big, chunky changes in terms of policy or whatever kind of approach that they take. But ours is slightly different. We try to hold what we have and make sure that's retained. Key to it is communication. And we use all channels available to us, particularly in person, where possible. We've never been more connected as a community and as a society. Technology has been brilliant, ensuring that we remain connected. But at the core of it all, we still want human contact and actually going and meeting people, understanding what their issues and problems may be in terms of supporting you. The secret to this is to get organised and to get visible. No doubt about that at all. Hopefully what we do bring is not just groans and gripes and concerns and crying, and then working with them to find a way where collectively you can have a positive result, we find is a much more most effective way.
Can you point to something where you definitively have made a difference? What success can you chalk up?
Well, our organisation was born as a campaign. There was a plan by the then Direct Rural Ministers to introduce business rates onto manufacturing properties. They didn't exist up until about 2007, thereabouts. And manufacturers got together, they got themselves organised, began with volunteers, they brought on some professional paid staff to assist them. They found the evidence that was required for the policymakers to feel that they could make a particular decision. And the result of that has been that rates in manufacturing properties have been capped for the last 10 years now, more or less. And that's a benefit of £58 million a year to the manufacturing sector. We've managed to retain that as we go on. The whole issue of energy is a massive concern for manufacturers. We can point to those small fractions of a fraction that make a difference, but also big actions in terms of ministerial involvement to make sure the problems that are faced by manufacturers in particular, but all large energy users, are actually understood, and that policymakers will now make decisions and choices, and hopefully regulators as well, in the interest of making sure that we have lower bills, and as a result, creating more work right across Northern Ireland.
Well, sometimes, I suppose, lobbying does get a bad name. And if it relates to anything in particular, I would guess that it's the idea that you, by working behind the scenes, to somehow subvert the democratic process.
Yeah, that has a bad reputation. Before, actually, I took this job on, I was very concerned about that as well. But we don't take money from the people that we're kind of campaigning to change. We don't pay for anything in particular. We certainly don't pay for hospitality for politicians or policymakers or others. And what I found in Northern Ireland is that people are very responsible around it. Yes, there could be risks that you could subvert the whole process. But people, this is a small place. This is no bigger than Greater Manchester for that matter. There's nobody spending any huge amounts of money to try to change the democratic process. People need to work together, and people are happy and content to work together.
Do you have to work within any particular legal framework?
Not here in Northern Ireland. Certainly around big elections and stuff, there are rules about spending, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we tend not to spend money in that way. I know certainly in the run-up to the recent referendum, a lot of the business groups were very conscious of their responsibilities. You're not allowed to spend more than £10,000 on a particular part of the campaign, et cetera, et cetera. We don't work in that way. We work on a much more personal one-to-one basis where we possibly can. We work very closely with the media, providing them with insight and commentary as well.
Oh, you're always on Twitter.
Yeah, and we're always using the social media channels, particularly Twitter, obviously. So there are rules, there are responsibilities that come alongside those rules. We tend not to try to even push the limits of that in any way by just not funding stuff.
Stephen Kelly, thank you for your time.
You're listening to The Profit Margin with First Trust Bank.
Earlier we spoke to Gareth Quinn from Digital DNA. They run a business and technology conference. And it's fair to say the technology sector is growing in Northern Ireland. In fact, Gareth, firms like yours are evidence of that. Yet do you think it's a bit fragmented? There's not one voice representing the software sector.
I think it's fair to say that there's not one voice, but I think that's apparent wherever you go, whether that be Dublin, London, Silicon Valley even, and it's not necessarily a bad thing that there's not one voice. The more representation we get, I guess, the better, so long as that it is a common message and there's not duplication. I think that we've got lots of different organisations who represent the tech sector. The likes of InvestNI do that, obviously, with the Northern Ireland Science Park as well, and various others. Momentum did do that previously. But I think we need to understand as well that tech now goes through not just the tech sector itself, but traditional businesses now involve tech. So there's representation there needed as well. So I guess there's not one voice. I don't think there should just be one voice. I think there's different views and different perspectives, but it's important that it's a coherent voice. And that it also that there's not duplication as well out there.
My feeling is, and of course I'm coming at it from an outsider, is that I'm not hearing one coherent voice from the software industry. And if I'm not hearing it, I suspect other people out there aren't, and perhaps government included. So do you not need to coordinate it in a more overt way so there is someone that the media, for instance, can go to and say, well, look, you know, broadly speaking, this is our view?
Yeah, I definitely do think that should be the case. And I think that arguably over this past maybe sort of 4 to 5 years, we've gone through a lot of transition with some organisations that were there previously who are no longer there. And there's been a lot that have now come to the fore, ones that have been set up specifically within Northern Ireland. Other organisations from London who've now got a role to play within Northern Ireland as well. And arguably, we don't get the representation from those organisations that we should. You know, it's arguably a box-ticking exercise, if you want to put it that way. So without doubt, you know, and that role arguably should be with, it's going to be under the Minister for the Economy, Simon Hamilton. And I would suspect that one of the things that he's now looking at is about having that one voice. I think that's particularly important for FDI opportunities here, where you've got a lot of people who look and, you know, do the stuff that we all do. They Google it online. They try to find out who's representing industry here. And whenever you type in something as simply as, you know, tech sector representation in Northern Ireland, if you look at the Google results, it doesn't bode well. You know, and that's what people use in this day and age to try and find out this information.
Yeah, and if we drill down to a particular example, there are a lot of people say that there should be coding in schools, and there are some excellent examples of it. But it's not widespread. Now, you could argue, I suppose, and would you agree with it, that this is down to a failure on lobbying?
I think it comes down to, we have our own view on lobbying, you know. So one of the projects that we're currently working with at the moment with Young Enterprise and with Sentinus, who are an organisation in Lisburn who help with the STEM agenda in schools, is that what we've identified is that the key decision, one of the key decision makers with schools and with regard to taking on computer science, for example, is the head teachers, the principals and the board of governors. So one of the things that we're hoping to do at Digital DNA next June is that we're going to have a dedicated session and invite specifically head teachers to hear from industry. And one of the firm believers that we're about is that, yes, you do have traditional lobbying, it definitely does have its place, but our role is that what we want to do is we want to connect those decision makers directly with industry so they get it directly from the horse's mouth, if you like.
Is there anything intrinsic to the software industry that doesn't lend itself to having a common voice? That, you know, you're all rugged individualists or something.
I think that's an interesting point, because you're drawing the comparison saying it's not in London, it's not in Silicon Valley. Is this, as you point out, Jamie, is this some kind of industry, malaise is the wrong word, but inherent in the industry itself?
I think if you look culturally, my take on it, you know, and I'm a sample of one, if you like, is that a lot of the time we have different programs, different initiatives, which have been set up for very different reasons, whether it's the private sector doing them, whether it's the government initiatives, whether it's the education system itself. And I think what you end up happening is, I think it's back to your point, Jamie, if you had one voice and one individual or one person was accountable for that, we can direct that more. And I think what we're doing is diluting the impact of a lot of these programs, arguably. Like Digital DNA, it was born out of a desire to try and help Northern Ireland create wealth by getting companies to trade globally. It sounds like a very grand idea, but that's what it did. And we did that because we felt frustrated that we didn't feel that was happening enough at that point in time. So you have lots of different organisations set up, and whether it's a cultural thing, I'm not sure, but there's obviously something there, I believe, where there is a fragmented approach.
I know, I like your thought there, Jamie. Rugged individualism, maybe that's what it is. But do you think, Gareth, it's something that will change, and I'm talking about specifically in Northern Ireland, as the industry matures? Do you see it evolving?
Yeah, I do see it evolving. I see it evolving quite much so. Like, you know, there was a recent Tech Nations report, you know, and the feedback in it in terms of what the tech industry gives to Northern Ireland, how that's growing, and the GVA, the value to Northern Ireland's economy. It's just huge, and the more that grows, the more we're going to have to take note of how important this is going to be to the future of Northern Ireland's economy. And I do think as well, and maybe it goes back to Jamie's point around that, you know, the fragmented approach is that, and I do believe this is a good thing, is that, you know, we can sit back and we can wait for that one voice. You know, so someone like me who's now in the private sector, you can wait for the one voice, but I think you've got more and more examples of industry just taking the bull by the horns and doing it themselves. And if you look at Kainos, a phenomenal company, you know, who have relied quite significantly on talent coming from the universities, they've now got an academy program where they bring people straight from schools into their own establishment. And I think what you have is that on one hand, yes, there's not one voice and it's fragmented. I do believe that in Northern Ireland we have for too long held back, waiting on the public sector coming in, rallying the troops and trying to help us out. And I feel more now you've got more people who are now sort of putting their shoulder to the wheel and saying, you know what, if that comes, great, but I'm going to do my own thing here. I think that sort of lends itself to sometimes that fragmented approach, you know.
Well, we'll keep a close eye and see how it develops. Gareth, thank you very much for your time.
You're listening to The Profit Margin with First Trust Bank.
Now with a look at what's coming up in the week ahead, here's Neil Parker from First Trust Bank.
Coming up, things to keep an eye on. Retail sales from the US. The Fed's going to be looking for reassurance that retail sales have recovered following a weak reading last month. The market will also scrutinise it to determine if the economy is healthy enough for a further rate rise this year. And from the UK, we'll have the latest inflation numbers and the Bank of England MPC meeting. The impact of the weaker pound following the Brexit vote in June will no doubt be reflected in rising prices, with many firms looking to pass on increased costs as goods leave the factory gate. Meanwhile, Bank of England Governor Mark Carney has left open the possibility of further rate cuts before year end, despite acknowledging the risk of recession seems to have faded. He has warned that the UK could still face a significant slowdown, so we could be in for lower borrowing costs, and I wouldn't expect to see rates rise in the UK this side of 2020.
And regular listeners will know it's getting to that time when we showcase a startup. This week it's Thomas Hislop from Coffee Box Games. They've already got a huge following online.
Hi, I'm Thomas from Coffee Box Games. We're a startup games company based in Belfast. As a company, we're one of the first games companies to be using influencer marketing to specifically sell a game where the influencer has created it themselves. So I run the company with Michael Bell, who's also known as the YouTuber Bellular Gaming. He currently has 196,000 subscribers and 3.9 million monthly views. We've successfully pitched our first project as part of the Microsoft Green Shoots program with Northern Ireland Screen called Stanbury's Mistake, which we'll be releasing later this year on Android, iOS and Windows Phone. And you can find us at www.coffeeboxgames.com and on Twitter at Bellular Gaming.
If you're interested, go check them out. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at The Profit Margin. We're also on Facebook. Let us know if your business is doing interesting work. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to The Profit Margin with First Trust Bank.